The Big Wake Up by Mark Coggins is what you hope every private eye novel will be, says Edgar Award-winning author Megan Abbott. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 22, Dealing and Wheeling. Chris made no objection to bunking with Evita. In fact, he seemed a little too enthusiastic about the prospect.
"I can get her cleaned up," he said,
"and maybe update her wardrobe."
I risked a glance over to him as we barreled across the Bay Bridge back to San Francisco. "She's not a giant Barbie doll, Chris. Just put her in the closet or something and leave her alone. I'm only asking because my apartment isn't a safe place to keep her."
"Yeah, yeah,"
he said.
"I hear you."
The idea is to hear and obey. When we got to the Castro neighborhood, we parked in the alley behind his apartment and bundled Evita into the freight elevator for a ride to Chris's top floor garret. Storage in the apartment turned out to be more of a problem than I anticipated. None of Chris's closets were big enough to lay her out on the floor, and she wasn't rigid enough to stand upright. We ended up spreading her out behind the crazy neon blue daybed he used for a couch. Given that the daybed didn't have a skirt, there was no hiding the fact that something wrapped in a drop cloth lay behind. But it was better than posing her in the apartment's bay window doing a royal wave to the street. When I got back to my place, I did the thing that had been on my mind since we liberated Evita. I called the number Isis had texted me from. There was still no answer. I hung up after 20 rings and then hunted and pecked on the dial pad for the letters I needed to send another text message. It read, "Have lead on E. Want proof M is alive and unharmed." I pressed send and waited. I waited for 20 minutes, not moving and not taking my eye off the display, but no return message came. I threw down the phone and went to the kitchen cabinet to retrieve my bottle of Maker's Mark. I slugged down a carefully considered inch. No more because I didn't want a raging hangover in the morning, and no less because I needed it to sleep, and then flopped into bed. I woke up scrambled in the covers with my feet dangling off one side of the mattress and my head lolling off the other. The phone was laying by the wall where I had thrown it the night before, its clamshell lid flipped open. A green message icon winked at me. I scurried off the bed to mash down the message button on the phone. "See envelope under door" appeared on the display. There was nothing in the entryway by the apartment door. I yanked the door open and looked in the hall. Still nothing. I ran over to the elevator and embarked on a maddeningly slow drop to the ground floor. I squeezed through the accordion door and went down three tile steps to the lobby of the building. The only thing there was a stack of Chinese yellow pages that had been delivered a year ago. Outside, a frail, white-haired guy was retrieving his mail from the boxes in the vestibule. Old Man Letterbach. I watched as he pulled a magazine and a plain brown wrapper from his box, and then I hurried back to the elevator. The last thing I wanted was to share a ride with him while he opened his latest issue of Nappy Boy. He surprised me by flitting through the building door before I could get the balky elevator started.
"Reardon,"
he said.
"Got something for you."
I let the accordion door slink open. "What?" Letterbach trudged up the stairs and stepped into the car with me. He looked at me with rheumy eyes.
"You need to get an iron, son."
I glanced down at my shirted pants, which were crisscrossed with wrinkles from being slept in. "You got me there. You said you had something for me?" He nodded.
"Found an envelope on the floor with your name on it."
He held out a brown clasp envelope with "August Reardon" written in block caps.
"You should be more careful with your correspondence. You don't want just anyone opening it."
"The same goes for your storage locker," I thought, but I didn't say it. I snatched the envelope out of his hands and slid past him to stand outside the car. I yanked the door closed, then spoke to him through the accordion bars. "Thanks a ton," I said. "I think I'll take the stairs after all." I heard him muttering as I flashed around the corner to the staircase. I raced up it, prying open the clasp on the envelope as I went. I waited until I was inside the apartment and then dumped the contents on the card table in my living room. Out tumbled a lock of hair, secured by a rubber band, and a photograph with a post-it note. The photograph was of Melina, gagged and bound in a chair. She looked strangely subdued, neither very frightened nor very angry. If there was any emotion in her face, it was disappointment. But maybe I was seeing more in a bad, overexposed snapshot than there was to see. What there was to see, in stark black and white, was a front page of today's San Francisco Chronicle. That, taken with a lock of hair, was supposed to assure me that they had her and she was alive. It seemed a little prissy and amateurish for a twisted Egyptian mummy maker, but I was just happy that Isis hadn't selected something other than hair. The post-it note was short and to the point. It directed me to call again at 9 o'clock. Only problem was, it was already 9:25. I ran to the bedroom and snatched up the phone. It rang in my hands. "Reardon," I answered, not even trying to mask the anxiety in my voice.
"Are you playing hard to get now?"
came the reply. The voice was low and garbled, and I didn't recognize it. "Who is this?"
"I work for the woman who sent you the envelope. Did it answer your question?"
"It's fine as far as it went."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean I want to talk to her."
"Isis?"
"I expect that's inevitable, but I mean Melina. I want to hear directly that she's okay." He grunted.
"You want a lot for someone who hasn't produced anything. You said you had a lead on Evita." "Exactly. What does that mean?"
"It means I have her."
"At your apartment?"
"No, not at my apartment. I've got her stashed in a safe place. I'm prepared to trade her for Melina. Today, if we can make satisfactory arrangements for an exchange."
"Exactly where did you find her?"
"I'm trading Evita, not information about Evita. Just know we're talking about the real deal, not another one of the duplicates." A sort of croaking laugh came over the line.
"That's an easy bluff to make, Mr. Reardon."
"Maybe. But how would I know the body glows, violet, if I was bluffing?"
"Hold on."
He put his hand over the receiver, and the only thing I heard for the next few minutes was a muffled rustling.
"We are prepared to go forward,"
he said when he came back.
"But if you are lying, or you show up to the exchange without the body, you will not see Melina alive ever again. And her death would not be pleasant. Isis said to tell you she personally guarantees this. Are we clear?"
I grabbed a fistful of hair at the back of my head and tugged on it. "Message received."
"What?"
"I said we're clear. Where and when do we meet?"
"You know the Cow Palace?"
"Sure. The Cow Palace was an arena built in the 1940s in Daly City, just south of San Francisco. It had been the site of countless professional sporting events, concerts, and even a couple of Republican conventions, but there were bigger and better venues for those things now, and it was mainly used for low-rent gatherings like gun and tattoo exhibitions."
"Meet us at 8 p.m. at the southwest corner of the overflow parking lot. Come unarmed and alone, and bring Evita."
"Okay, but I still need to talk to Melina." He covered the phone again, then after more rustling, I heard the same voice in the background saying,
"Talk to him."
"August,"
said Melina. "Melina, are you okay?"
"Yes, yes, I am okay."
"You've been treated well? Nothing bad of any sort has been done to you?"
"Nothing has been done to me."
Her voice was soft, but strained at the same time, as if she were trying to project a calm demeanor in a tense situation. Then, abruptly, she dropped all pretense of calm.
August, do not do what...
The phone dropped to the floor, and I couldn't make out anything else. The man who I had been talking with came back on the line.
She is brave, but short-sighted. I think you know better than to renege on our exchange.
Yes.
At the overflow lot of the Cow Palace at 8 o'clock then, the southwest corner.
He clicked off before I could respond. I took the phone away from my ear and looked down at it, without really seeing it. I didn't know what to make of Melina's warning. Was she being a misguided martyr? Trying to alert me to a double cross? I had very little time to think about it before the phone rang again. I answered immediately, assuming it was the mystery voice calling back with some new instructions. It turned out to be General Vilas.
Well?
He said. I could just picture him with his hooded reptilian eyes, stooping over the phone. I toyed with the idea of pretending I didn't know what he was talking about, but there didn't seem to be any point. He wanted status, so I'd give him status. Whether it was true or not was another question. She may be in Sacramento, I said.
Sacramento?
Yes, it's the capital of California.
Spare me the civics lesson. Why there?
I don't know why exactly, but I do know the ship that transported the fake Evita had another casket on board from Italy. The second casket was taken to Sacramento.
You found the ship's manifest from 1974?
No.
How did you know there was another casket?
I have my ways.
You had better not be lying to buy time, Mr. Reardon. What do you intend to do now?
You caught me just as I was heading out. I'm driving up there. I'm going to check with the Sacramento Health Department to see if they have the burial transit permit. Failing that, I'm going to make the rounds of the cemeteries, starting with the Catholic ones. Vilas took some time before he responded. With any luck, he was deciding to send grandson Maximo up in his Porsche to beat me to the punch.
Very good. I will talk with you tomorrow unless you find her sooner. Then I expect you to call immediately.
Of course, I said, meaning no way in hell. We said wary goodbyes, and I hung up to get showered and changed. I had a lot to do before 8 o'clock. You have been listening to The Big Wake Up, a book Publishers Weekly described as outstanding in a starred review. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.